It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome to Pretty Lies and Alibis. Let's seek the truth and travel the long road to justice together. What you know, alibiers? Happy Friday. I thought I would get a very late episode in tonight, and part two will be late, but y'all, I had to hop on here and do part one because I had heard some rumblings that Elizabeth Armour, who is Jake's wife from Alaska, may be testifying today. So I kind of was wondering, would she opt in or out? And originally I thought she may opt out. However, she has done some videos publicly to sort of explain her position as his wife and what she didn't know, obviously, which is that she married into a family of mass murderers. And I really do think, you guys, to me, her testimony today has been the most powerful out of anybody who's testified so far. So a little background on Elizabeth. They call her Beth Ann, but Elizabeth is her given, you know, obviously her full name. So she was raised in an Amish Mennonite community. She has that beautiful Dutch accent that I love so much. And she is very honest. She seems very trustworthy. And I think with a jury that's composed mostly of women, I believe 9 of the jurors are women, this is going to resonate with them. Number one, because she seems so sweet. Just really, I think she is brave for what she's doing to be recorded, also to get her side of the story out there and known, which is what she's tried to do in the past. But she seems very, very credible. I don't doubt a word she said, and I would imagine the jury feels the same way. So currently, they're probably right back from lunch, which will be cross-exam. And if Parker and Nash have any sense, they will go very easy on her because it's almost childlike, her naiveness. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I think the way she was raised, she was very inexperienced in the world when she met Jake and started dating him and then married him. And it comes across in her testimony, very pure and way, way too trusting. Obviously, just not in a bad way, but inexperience, I think, was her downfall. So she had been the source of some hearings in pretrial hearings because they knew she was going to testify for the state. And the defense wanted her address, I guess, to be able to talk to her as well. But it wasn't provided. In fact, Canepa helped her to try and change her identity by getting her a new social security number and things of that nature because she was very afraid for her life after, really before the Wagners were arrested, but especially after. She did do some interviews, and we will talk about that in some videos that she put out herself. And we're going to get into that. But first, really quickly, song fact of the day, Stevie Nicks, tomorrow night, y'all. I'm there with my girls. She said that The Edge of 17 was written right after John Lennon was assassinated. She said it was a very scary and sad moment for everybody in the rock and roll business. And it scared them that some person could be so deranged that he would wait outside of your apartment building, never knowing you, and shoot you dead. She said, just to be a music person, a Beatle, and to be shot and killed in front of your own apartment when you have a wife and two kids, it was unacceptable to all of us in our community. So the white dove was representing John Lennon and peace. So there you go. So she did a few videos, TikTok, there's some on YouTube and things like that, where she's asked, or she's actually answering common questions that she's asked about this whole thing. And at the time that she recorded these, Jake had not confessed. So she said that, you know, he's in jail. He has not been convicted. And the most common question she was asked is, did you know that he was involved with this before you married him? And the answer is not really. She said he came to our church in Alaska, by the way, and it was pastored by Caleb Sinareski. He was a young preacher. She said, I wouldn't say an experienced preacher. It was his first position, so I think we should give him a lot of grace in that because it was his first time going solo. And he felt for the Wagner family. If I'm not mistaken, I believe the Wagners actually knew him from Ohio. And he had told the congregation that it was his understanding that the Wagners had been troubled by news reporters and that it was slander and that things were not true. So she said she was encouraged to believe that the whole Wagner family and Jake was innocent. And she got to know him, spent time with him, spent time with Sophia. And she said it just came to be that they needed to move to the lower 48. They were married March 24th, 2018. And we'll get into how all that happened in the testimony. She said finding out the man she married wasn't who she thought he was a person's worst nightmare come true. She had to move three times since leaving the Wagner home. And come to find out, a person has to be in one state for at least 6 months before they can put any kind of divorce paperwork through any kind of legal system. So at the time that she did this, she was still married to Jake. And here is a picture of a GoFundMe that she actually started to help fund her divorce to Jake. It says, I married Jake Wagner when he was indicted, who was indicted for murder about 6 months after our wedding. After the layers upon layers of lies and deception, which he carefully wove around me, were forcefully burdened, broken off of my eyes, I fled. To divorce an individual, one must live in an area for 6 months prior to the filing. This time, I have now achieved. Yay. I'm hoping to divorce Jake Wagner within the next few months. However, due to his involvement with a capital offense, I'm quite certain that I will require legal aid. So she put a raising goal of $1,000 up there. Here's a picture of her testifying today. Just a brave, brave woman. Hats off to her. So she said, I can't answer your questions about the murders. And then she said, another thing people keep asking me is, why do you care about Sophia? She's not your biological daughter. And they've made comments to her, don't you know she has family? You're not her real mother. And why would you say that you love her? Surely it's better for her if you're not there. She said, I beg to differ. The first time Sophia smiled since a real happy smile, since the occurrence, was when she went out with me for ice cream in Alaska. And yes, Jake was there. So looking back on that, I'm like, oh goodness, he was there. But she smiled a real smile when I was there with her, and every time she saw me, her face would light up. I missed those moments. She would say, Miss Beth, I found this for you. And it was, Miss Beth, come look at this flower. And so she said they would play tag in the backyard, and she said, I would have never decided to get married without considering how Sophia would feel. She's a living, breathing little girl. She has her own heartbreak. And when she came to me and said, I want you to be my new mommy since my mommy is in heaven, she said, what do you think that did to me? She said, I didn't jump into it. I prayed about it for weeks on end. I fasted and prayed. I wanted to know what I was supposed to do. And I just kept seeing that I was supposed to love her. And God had put me in a position to love her. And he gave me love in my heart for her. And you can say it wasn't the same as the love of a biological mother, but I would beg to differ because I got pregnant while I was with Jake and I lost my child. Now, at the beginning of testimony today, she was asked if she had any children, and she said none that were living. However, Angela finished up direct exam before lunch, and that pregnancy was not brought up. She said, I lost everything that year. I lost my biological child. And she said, I can tell you the love in my heart was the same for both of them. And then she does artwork, and some people had accused something that was an infinity symbol of looking like an eight. And she addressed that to the people saying it was an infinity symbol, not at all any slight to the eight victims. So let's get into this testimony because I've got to catch up on Cross now. But she grew up in an Amish Mennonite community, and she went to school until the eighth grade, as most Amish do. They leave after the eighth grade. They have special permissions. So they typically, after eighth grade, the girls start learning how to do things around the house, and the boys go to work in the fields or building or whatever they do. So they were working with the church in Alaska to help her get her high school education. So that's why she moved up there. And she lived with a family in Alaska while she was doing this who had lived in the same Amish community as she had lived in. So she got her GED and she was working for a medical facility up there, and she went to church. It was a fundamental Baptist church, and it had the school that was actually helping her get her GED. So her first encounters with the Wagners, Jake, Angela, and the children were at church. She thought Jake and Angela were actually a couple who had two kids. She came out of the nursery and she said she looked down the hall and Jake was at one end of the hallway and she was at the other and he was looking at her. She said she was nervous and she thought she was attracted to him because she said the feeling was very intense when they locked eyes. And she had zero experience with dating. So Jake reached out to her on Facebook wanting to talk and asked her out. And she said she wasn't comfortable dating somebody she didn't know. So the next time he saw her, he formally introduced himself. They were at church and he asked her to go into the gym and talk with him. So they did. And then shortly after, they started dating. She said they would just go out to eat, take walks, or just go for drives. She came to know Sophia, and sometimes Sophia would tag along when they would go out. They would play in the snow or take her for ice cream. Normally, Jake, Sophia, Angela, and Vine would come to church regularly. She said maybe twice it was that George and Billy came. She had heard the rumors about the Wagners, and the pastor got in front of the whole congregation and said he knew the Wagners from Ohio, and there was some news about them, and they should ignore it and welcome them to the community. Now, Beth says she doesn't watch TV at all, so she really did not know any of the backstory about the murders or anything like that. The pastor gave an interview when the Wagners were in Alaska to the Daily Mail and viciously defended them, by the way. So Jake told her that his family had been hounded by the media because his ex had been murdered and he was under suspicion just because he had dated her. So she said she accepted those explanations from Jake and from the pastor and felt comfortable with it. The family she was living with was law enforcement family, and they told her since it had been 2 years, the Wagners would have already been arrested if they had done it, and she shouldn't worry. So when they were dating, she met the rest of the Wagners twice, only once before they got married at his house and then afterwards, obviously. Jake said his family was renting a house from him, but he told Beth he did not have a good relationship with his family and did not spend time with them if he could help it. He said he avoided them if he could, but he said he gave them land to live on since they were in hard times. He's trying to look like a big hero. The relationship obviously intensified, and she went to their house, and she said her first impression was that everybody in the house was yelling. She said Angela, Vine, Sophia, Billy, and George. Everybody seemed angry, stressed, and she said she had never heard people shout that loudly in her life. She said Jake just said they were stressed. She learned that Jake did, in fact, live with them, and the relationship got really serious. So 9 months after they met, he proposed. The initial plan was to be engaged for 2 years to get to know each other better, but Jake would give her reasons they needed to move that date up over and over, she said. He said they were moving to Missouri, where they would get a farm and raise cows and pigs, and they would have a house away from the others, just at one end of the property, and the other Wagners would live at the other. And this was actually really common in the Amish community, so that concept did not seem super foreign to her. It ended up they got married actually just one month after getting engaged. The day before they left Alaska, she went to the house and they were packing. They asked her if she could watch Vine and Sophia, and she said she helped pack a few things. As far as the wedding went, they were married in a cabin at a friend's house, and the family she lived with, the father, he was the one that wedded them. She had one friend there and one of her brothers out of seven. She has seven brothers, no sisters. She said the actual wedding day was calm and nice. Angela was playing with the kids, getting them cake. But she said George and Billy kind of sat in the corner with their arms folded, clearly not happy this was happening. They did not have a honeymoon on their wedding night. They stayed in a local hotel, just her and Jake. And when asked what happened on her wedding night, bless her heart, she drops her head and she just gets a little quiet. She said she had no experience with intimacy whatsoever. And she asked that they not consummate their marriage on that night. And she said Jake agreed to it, but he did not honor that agreement. After they consummated the marriage, he asked for her personal information, bank account access, social security number, phone passcode, and he had her sync her phone to his so he could see all of her calls and texts. I mean, poor thing, just she stepped into it. She can't remember if it was before or after the marriage, but she had to sign an agreement from Angela that was to keep her from trying to get custody of Sophia in the event of a divorce. They showed the agreement that she was asked to sign. Angela was there, and Jake said she was better at making paperwork than he was, and she helped create the document. It had typos and all that, but it reads, "This legal written contract is between Edward J. Wagner and Elizabeth A. Freeman on March 2018. This contract is concerning the child of Edward J. Wagner, Sophia M. Wagner, that in the event of a divorce at any time in the future between Edward J. Wagner and Elizabeth A. Freeman, she agrees to not make any attempt to see any full residential custodial parent rights of Sophia M. Wagner. In short, Sophia M. Wagner will remain in the care of her father, Edward J. Wagner, who is the current full custodial parent." On their wedding night, Jake also told her she couldn't have contact with her family. She had explained to Jake while they were dating that two of her brothers in their early childhood had sexually experimented with her when she was very young. She said her family did not have sex education, so they were under the age of 10 when this happened. The first one had approached her inappropriately when she was 3 or 4, and the other when she was 7. Because of that, Jake told her to cut ties with her entire family on their wedding night. She thinks that she was allowed a couple of times to contact her mother. You see that with the Wagners. Unfortunately, victims of sexual abuse are everywhere, and we would probably be shocked to know the number of people we all personally know that have been victims. And all three of the girls that the Wagner boys dated had been violated in childhood, and they preyed on that and then made it almost their fault and would isolate them from their families due to this. So they only stayed in that hotel one night. Jake and the family left for Missouri the next morning. Jake, George, and Billy drove together, and then Angela drove separately with the kids. She left Alaska a week after that. I'd wondered if she crossed the border with them, but she did not. So the original plan was for her to drive with Jake, but her passport didn't come through in time due to a name change in her teens. When her parents were divorced, her mom had her name legally changed. So a week later, she flew alone to Missouri. And when she got there, everyone was there, and they went to a hotel. She found out at the hotel there was everyone all in one room. Billy was going to sleep in the parking lot in the truck, and her and Jake in one bed, Angela and the kids in the other, and George in the recliner. George and Billy were only in Missouri for one night. She was overwhelmed and horrified. She got scared, and she actually left the room to call someone to arrange to leave. She took the elevator to the top floor, and she said she was hiding in a recessed door, crouching down, making a call to her brother asking for help. But Jake and Sophia came looking for her. Jake asked Sophia to find her, so Sophia would run around the floor, and then eventually Beth could see them coming up to find her. Eventually, they found her. Sophia ran up to her and grabbed her arm and said, "Miss Beth," and pulled her to Jake. And then Jake took her back to the hotel room. So once back in the room, everyone, she said, was agitated and confronted her about leaving the room alone and said it wasn't safe because news reporters may be outside and try to get her to talk. And she was only to leave the room if somebody was with her. She ended up staying at the hotel. So they were there between 5 and 7 days, but George and Billy drove back to Ohio that next day. And George took Billy back to the Flying W Farms, and then he came back to that hotel in Missouri. So while they were there for the day, the 5 to 7 days, they drove around looking for housing and work. And she was told they already had a farm, but then she was told it fell through at the last moment and they needed to find another one. After George got back, it was only a day later that they left. She was told Billy would not be living with them in Missouri. Angela would look at property and say she didn't like it for this reason or that reason, and they decided to go back to Ohio. Angela, Jake, and George said they had a place to stay in Ohio, and they were asking her if she was okay with Ohio. She said she was unhappy because Jake had promised them they wouldn't go back to Ohio given the atmosphere with the news there, but she was tired of being in a hotel and went with them to Ohio. So once in Ohio, they obviously, as we know, went to live at Angela's dad's house who had died while they were in Alaska. That house was next door to her mom, Rita Newcomb's. So if you remember, in that house was Granny B, Rita, Chris Newcomb, and Randa, his partner. Billy maybe slept over once or twice while she was there, but he was not there on a regular basis. She did not have a car there. She sold it while she was in Alaska. So she switched her driver's license from Alaska to Ohio. And this was an objection that was sustained, but she got it out. The Wagners gave her a false address to use. If you remember, the boys did the same thing. They had given a prior address of Rita Newcomb's that she wasn't even living in when they switched their driver's license. But she had asked Jake what address to put, and he told her. So when she got home, she saw the house number and realized it was not the address he had given her. She said they started painting the interior of the house, and they painted one room pink and one room blue. Her and Jake slept in the pink room, sometimes Sophia, but she mainly slept with Angela if Jake was out driving trucks. The blue room was Vine and Angela's, and the third room was George's. So she explains this now. We've heard about this pink room, and she gave a little insight as to why they painted this room pink. The reason is, if there was ever an inquiry into the children's well-being, they would say Sophia's room was pink and Vine's was blue. Jake and George got jobs driving the truck, so they would be gone most of the week and come home on the weekends. when Jake was home, Sophia would sleep in the pink room with them. Even though she had her own little bed in the corner, Jake would put her in the bed, sometimes in between them, but then a lot of times he would put her to where Sophia was on his side and then Beth. When George was home, Vine still slept with Angela. And during this time, she still wanted her own place with Jake and Sophia. She talked about the family dynamics between Jake, George, and Angela. She said there were a lot of strained interactions. They were stressed, emotional, angry, lots of shouting. Decisions were made as a group. The discussions, as we know, would happen in the kitchen. And she wasn't asked to join in, but she would hear them because it was so loud. And she could hear what they were talking about, how they were going to answer certain people's questions, either people they knew, the media, or even BCI agents, questions about the children, things like that. She remembers them talking about tennis shoes, and she heard them say someone thought Angela bought them shoes from Walmart, and they said it was ridiculous because they wore boots, and they mentioned these shoes to, they mentioned that to Beth several times about they don't wear sneakers, only boots. Jake, George, and Angela discussed a lot of things. One thing was a pocket knife with blood on it, and that was objected to, but she was allowed to answer, and it's because Billy would pick at his skin with it. And she was in the kitchen, actually, of the Flying W Farms. Angela, George, and Jake were in there, as well as Frederica. And they showed her this picture, which is Jake's hand holding the gun. And they asked Beth what that looked like. And she said, well, it's Jake's hand holding a gun. And she said, everybody freaked out and said, you can't say that. So she is shown this photo in court and confirms that's the same one. She said they were afraid BCI was listening and she needed to learn how to answer questions better in case BCI or the media asked her questions. And they had her say she had never seen anything like that before regarding the picture. She was aware that BCI was engaging the Wagners, and she was told to be careful not to go outside very much in case BCI saw her. She heard George and Jake talking about harming law enforcement multiple times, and one time stood out to her. There was objections, of course. They were in the house in the living room, and George and Jake were loudly discussing what they would do if Agent Scheider or certain members of law enforcement were near them. They also talked about creating an electric weapon that would harm DeWine, Scheider, and agents that annoyed them. They also discussed if one or more of them got arrested. Now, at this point, she is visibly shaken and asks for a moment and says she's very nervous. And she just puts her head down and says that her mind blanked because you have to kind of put yourself in her shoes. The last time she saw George Wagner, she was escaping the Wagner household. And now she is telling their secrets up on the stand, not only with him 20 feet away, but also to the world. And so I felt her pain. I wanted to give her a big old hug. It was an ongoing conversation that they had almost every day as far as hurting the agents or busting out. It was also discussed with all the Wagners, including Rita and Chris Newcomb a couple of times. They would discuss different scenarios, say if George and Billy were arrested, who would take care of the kids? If they all were arrested, Frederica would take care of the kids. Just different scenarios they would toss around on a regular basis. They also discussed escaping from jail. It was George, Jake, Angela, and she says Chris Newcomb.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
She said Billy was nearby in earshot, but she really didn't indicate he was participating in that conversation. This is so stupid. They discuss creating a bulletproof bulldozer to drive through the jail to buzz people out because, yeah, high-speed bulldozer chases happen all the time. What morons. Oh, boy. And now it's time for a word from our paid sponsor of the week, BetterHelp Therapy Online. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. Everyone deserves to feel their best, and BetterHelp makes it easier to get started. As the world's largest therapy service, they've matched millions of people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists available 100% online. All the benefits of in-person therapy, plus it's more convenient, more accessible, and more affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with the therapist. If things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. It couldn't be simpler. No waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless searching for the right therapist. Get unstuck with BetterHelp. Learn more and save 10% on your first month at BetterHelp.com/whattheworld. That's BetterHelp.com/whattheworld. They've helped me out. Been a rough year for me. Grateful for their service and the convenience to be able to do it from home. And now it's time for a word from our paid sponsor of the week, Everly Well. Take action today for a healthier tomorrow with Everly Well. Their at-home lab tests and vitamins and supplements can get you the knowledge and support you need so you can become a healthier you. Everly Well is digital healthcare designed for you at an affordable and transparent price. With over 30 at-home lab tests, you'll be able to choose the test that makes the most sense for you to get the answers you need, like the women's health test or food sensitivity test. Everly Well also has high-quality vitamins and supplements to support your overall health. Choose from a variety of options, including vitamin D3 and omega-3 fish oil. Here's how it works. Everly Well ships products straight to you with everything needed in one package. To take your at-home lab test, simply collect your sample and use the included prepaid shipping label to mail your test back to a certified lab. Your physician-reviewed results get sent to your phone or device in just days, and you can share the results with your primary care physician to help guide the next steps. If you ordered vitamin supplements, you can start adding them to your daily routine right away. It's really simple. Over 1 million people have trusted Everly Well to support their health and wellness goals, and you should too. I took the food sensitivity test, learned some of the foods I love were not so good for me. For listeners of Pretty Lies and Alibis, Everly Well is offering a special discount of 20% off an at-home lab test at everlywell.com/whattheworld. That's everlywell.com/whattheworld for 20% off your next at-home lab test. everlywell.com/whattheworld. Angela talked to her about hers and Jake's sexual relations, as she did with Tabitha and Hannah Mae. She asked if her and Jake were actively trying to conceive a child, and Angela said it was not a good time. And she also asked if her and Jake had relations when Sophia was in the room, and said it was inappropriate if they did. She said her and Jake also had that discussion, and Beth didn't think it was appropriate, but Jake did not listen. They spoke about Tabitha once they moved to Ohio. Angela told Beth things about Tabitha. There was a sidebar, big objection sidebar. Angela accused Beth of poisoning the kids' food. Jake brought it to her attention first, and then Angela said something to her in the kitchen about it. Angela said the kids had been having diarrhea and vomiting, although nobody but Angela witnessed that. Beth said she made tacos, and the next couple of days is when Angela accused her of it. Angela also told Jake that Beth had touched Sophia in an inappropriate manner. So Jake tells Beth this, and Jake told her because of the allegation, George wasn't comfortable with her living in the house with Vine and that she needed to move out. She had a conversation with Jake and Angela about the allegation in the kitchen, and she said it was a showdown. She was called to the kitchen, and Jake said he didn't think she did it, but she needed to explain herself to Angela, since Angela was the one, of course, that had suspicions. She said Angela was acting high and mighty. Jake was questioning her sternly and said if she had done it, the right thing to do would be for him to recreate Lucille, which is the baseball bat from The Walking Dead that has barbed wire on it, string her up in the barn and beat her to death, bulldoze the barn, burn it down, hunt down and kill her entire family. And if he didn't do it, Angela, George, or Billy would do it. At this point, the poor girl, she is quivering and breathing heavily, recalling this. You can tell this is very traumatic for her. As soon as Jake said he didn't think she did it, she went to the bedroom, packed her bag, called her friend in Alaska who had told her if she needed help to call, and said she wanted to leave immediately. She really just was afraid they were going to kill her. She told her friend Jake threatened to murder her, and she thought he may, and she needed to go somewhere. So her friend thought she was just overly emotional and overreacting. So he asked to talk to Jake to clarify what had happened. She heard Jake's end of the conversation, and Jake was saying he didn't mean it, that he was joking, it was a figure of speech. So after the phone call with Jake, her friend told her he didn't believe Jake had it in him to kill someone, and thought Jake was exaggerating and just encouraged her to calm down a bit. But Beth was still making plans to leave. They really restricted her interactions with the kids after that. Angela made the rule that Beth could not be alone with the kids. So if they came in the room where she was, either the kids had to leave, or if they tried to give her a hug, she had to push them away. She said it was awkward because Vine and Sophia were very affectionate, and it was hard to keep that distance. And while she was living there, she actually found out that they had been going through her personal belongings. Angela, Jake, and George would confront her as a group about things of hers, such as a personal diary. She would write, "Dear Granddaddy." So she explained that instead of "Dear Diary," she was very, very close to her grandfather, who is now deceased. And she would write when she was stressed. And the contents of the diary, she was confronted about the contents of this diary. So I'm going to read these entries out to you. "Dear Granddaddy, the people I live with are okay. All right, I guess. They're constantly yelling and hitting, and not one of them understands the concept or need for privacy. Even the most private of all human doings are open for discussion and comment in this family. It grates on my nerves. Also, nobody seems to understand basic ownership." So there is a second entry that she reads. "Dear Granddaddy, I try so hard not to hate people. Proof of this is that out of my entire crazy big family, there are only two people I truly hate. But now, Granddaddy, there are three. Daniel, Isaac, and Angela. I'm going to call her Ms. Angela because the name fits her. Anyways, Ms. Angela is horrible for all these reasons. Number one, she married unwisely and believes all marriages are destined to end like hers. Number two, she has her fingers in my husband's pocketbook and makes exuberant demands on his salary, holding her own gifts and held over his head like a glove to emphasize her demands. Three, she has more say over my life right now than I do because she controls my husband through his child. Four, she's verbally abusive and yells insinuations at my husband, which he doesn't understand, but I do. Five, she dislikes and ridicules books. Six, because she is a manipulative liar, she is teaching our daughter to manipulate and lie. Seven, my husband would listen to her far rather than to me because she has raised his daughter thus far. Number eight, she believes me to be a replica of Tabby and treats me as such. She has insinuated several times that she expects me to poison her. Number nine, she has repeatedly declared that she will see to it that Sophie will always prefer to be with her and never accept me as her mama. Number 10, she has threatened my husband with custody battles." Found that interesting. So apparently it wasn't just with the mothers of the kids that were threatened. It was also Angela threatening Jake. Number 11, "The most horrible thing is I have her totally within my power. All I would have to do would be to tell people she did it to get Sophie away from her abusive mother, and I would get her a lifetime sentence like that. Only thing is, as much as I hate the woman's guts, it would not be true. She allows and encourages Vine's obesity. 13, She treats the children second. Work first and kids second. 14, she keeps tabs on me, always watching and listening to see where I am. 15, I'm having to live in her house under her direct control and condemnation. Then she has planned to crush her. Yep, that took a turn, y'all, didn't it? 1, treat her only friendly and respectfully. 2, try to become her friend. She's like Rhonda, so she really only respects working buddies. 3, be nice because I'm bigger than her. 4, once I have her trust and friendships, slam the relationship door shut in her face. She likes gifts, food, animals, gardening, money, 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 her kids, grandkids, working, cooking, favors, and hospitality. She is sensitive about her weight and appearance. She was either physically abused or else mistreated in her childhood. Basically, all bossies want minions. I love it. You go, girl. Jake, George, and Angela told her asked what the purpose of the writings were, and she said it was her form of stress relief. They told her it was dangerous because BCI could find those writings. She thinks Rita was nearby during this discussion, and they asked if she would burn the journal and flush it down the toilet. She did burn it. Jake had a lighter, and they burnt it and took it and flushed the ashes down the toilet. Now, this is probably going to come in on cross because the one thing the prosecution did not do is make clear that maybe it was another diary that they burned and that this was one they didn't get to. So I'm curious to see how that plays out. So Canepa says, you said she considered you a replica of Tabby. Who's Tabby? Well, she says she was George's wife or ex-wife. Angela, Jake, and George would talk about Tabitha in terms of her being abusive, strange, said she hurt Vine, that she had knocked the child off the table, tried to poison both George and Vine. They made crazy claims about her, and the longer I stayed in that house, they made the same claims about me. She accused me of food poisoning specifically, and I never touched Sophia inappropriately. When talking about her hands in my husband's pocketbook, she says she had never been in a group of people who had finances this way. She said different people in the Wagner house had debts, but they would hold everyone accountable to pay them off. She said it was not like giving somebody a gift. It was, I'm raising your kid, so you better pay for this or that, or you better get me this or that. She said sometimes finances was a topic of the family meetings, and she has when asked when she wrote, she has more say over my life. She controls my husband through his child. She's asked, what did you mean? And Jake told Beth they would get their own place with Sophia, but Angela would say Sophia needed to be with her. Sophie didn't like Beth. She made statements about what Sophie was feeling. Because of that, they couldn't get their own place, or they couldn't take a trip, or they couldn't go see Beth's family because it always the excuse centered around Sophia. When asked about the books, she said Angela hated books and Beth likes to read. So sometimes she would go into her room and read and Angela would stop her, or Beth would read to the kids and Angela would not let her. Angela would make comments, I don't know why you're reading those books, things like that. So even though Sophia, she says, this was interesting. She said Sophia was nervous around Angela. She would say she knew what was best for her, and she would use Sophia to get Jake to do whatever Angela wanted him to do. Beth said Sophia seemed to enjoy being with her and in her company when it was just her, Sophia, and Jake. She really did expect and want to fulfill that mother's role in Sophia's life, and she thought she could be beneficial to Sophia. Angela would say to Beth that Sophia would always prefer her over Beth. And then you said you could tell authorities, you could tell them she was involved, but you say it would not be a true statement. And Beth said it was right after she had first been accused of the food poisoning. And at that point, she still believed the Wagner story that they were innocent. Angela didn't like it if she closed any door, including, y'all, the bathroom door. If Beth went outside, Angela would get nervous and either she would come out to get her or send one of the kids to come out and get her. Angela always wanted Beth in her sights. And daily life when Jake and George were away driving, she said for the most part, Angela would leave her alone. She didn't act with her, only just to know where she was at all times. Beth said to get out of the house, she would take walks down the road, and they didn't want her to, so they would meet as a group with her and explain why it was dangerous to take walks alone. They would tell her they were afraid the media or BCI would contact her, and she said she still took the walks, and she knew she was pushing boundaries. So sometimes she would go to the cemetery or the library, and I'm pretty sure I heard this right, but it was never talked about. She said they were afraid of the cemetery. Maybe the ghosts were starting. I hope they see these people's faces every night they close their eyes, or even when they're wide awake and eyes open. While she was walking, Jake would call her and stay on the phone with her the entire time she was walking. And then she was asked about private things open for discussion, and she said she would be asked if she and Jake would have intimate relations, and they would talk about there sometimes. So this was a really funny moment, and I'm just going to say what she said. She said Billy and George would talk about going to see whores. So this is the only time I've ever seen George crack half a smile. He got tickled at that, and so did Nash. And I mean, it was just the only time I've ever seen any look on his face other than just looking ticked off at the world. She wasn't sure if that's the term that they used, and she remembers it maybe being past tense. She said she had never experienced talking about intimate stuff like that before, and it was super uncomfortable, obviously. Nobody wants to talk to anybody's, you know, mother-in-law about what you do. She said the yelling mostly was George, Angela, and Billy, and the hitting was actually Vine and Sophia, and that would happen most often while the arguing between the adults was going on. Anytime they were all in the same place, there would be yelling. She thought they had her personal documents. She said during the transit from Alaska to Ohio, a bag was lost that had all of her personal documents in it. She was shown an application by Angela for a Social Security card, Angela Canepa, I'm sorry, a name change due to marriage, and also she was having to apply for a new one because, number one, she had lost it. Also, she was now a Wagner. And she's also shown the name change document her mom made after her parents were divorced. They had marriage certificates of hers and Jake's. So as we know, she lived next door to Rita, Randa, Chris, and Granny B. She went there once a day to visit. She said Granny B would sometimes watch the children. I don't know if it's B or D. They would eat dinner together. Sometimes they all came over to the Wagners. Jake told her if they came to trust her, she may be invited to family meetings. I mean, who would not want to take part in that, right? I'm sure she was counting down the days. When George and Angela said they weren't comfortable with her around, Beth suggested maybe it would be better if she got her own place or lived with somebody else. She also said she mentioned she was in over her head with the legal and media aspects of being in Ohio, so she thought maybe it was better if she was secluded, just away from all of it. That became a topic of a family meeting, and they did discuss it. And she kept talking about it, so they would be okay with her leaving. When she was living there, she knew Jake would go see an attorney, and at one time, he took her along with him to go see an attorney. She also knew Angela and George went to see a different attorney together. While Jake was gone driving, she would talk to him about the Bible at his request and read passages to him, and Jake had asked her to read scripture while he was on the road because he wanted to get to know God better, he said. She said they did this pretty much nightly. Oh, by the way, on their wedding night, Jake told her if her family ever showed up to their house, he would kill them. I mean, talk about a honeymoon. She lived with the Wagners for 3 months total, and Jake explained to her that they decided periodically who would make decisions, and it revolved around who, depending on, I guess, what time of the year. But at that time, it was Angela who was making all the decisions for everybody in the house. In the past, it might be Jake. In the past, it might be George. And he told Beth if she was there long enough and was trusted, she would be able to make decisions at a point in the future. Anytime George, Angela, Jake, or the kids went somewhere, somebody always went along. Nobody was ever alone except George. Sometimes they shopped together, ate together, went to the gas station together. If they went to Flying W, they were never just, I'm going to go. She said they would all go to Flying W together. Jake and George would target practice. They'd ride four-wheelers. They would eat dinner there, play with the animals, things like that. She said George would go out alone late at night between 11 p.m. He would come home between 2 and 4 because she would hear his truck all hours of the night and hear him come in. I wonder where he was going. We'll just go back to that picture where he got tickled. She had alone time with Jake once a week. And Sophia and Vine, she confirmed, called Angela Amini Mommy. After the confrontation and threat with the bat, she unsynced her phone from Jake's and started making plans to leave. She said she didn't want to rock the boat, so she did whatever they asked her to. They still allowed her to walk to the library. And at this point, once she got into the library, she would pretend she was inside and couldn't talk on the phone and would call people she knew trying to arrange help to get out of there. Her dad came from Texas to help her. He flew to Ohio. She also had the girl that was her bridesmaid in the wedding to Jake come and help her. She left on August 6, 2018. 3 months she lived with them. On this day she left, she agreed with the Wagners to go stay with her friend to avoid the media and BCI and also to allow her to go to college. Angela and Rita drove her to the Walmart and dropped her off in the parking lot. She walked into that Walmart, went into a changing room, changed her clothes, and left out the back through the tire section because she was worried they were following her. She got into a rented car, took the SIM card out of her phone, and they drove on side roads and hid for a while. After a while, they drove to a restaurant where she switched cars and she was driven to Virginia. Pretty smart plan. She's tried to conceal her whereabouts since then. She sent Jake maybe one or two messages saying she had arrived safely to postpone them following her. And once she left, she was contacted by BCI and she agreed to do a controlled call with Jake. They talked about Sophia's health, how she was, their plans, and he asked where she was, and she did not tell him honestly where she was. She said she was angry how disturbed and distressed Sophia was when she lived there, and she suggested to Jake that maybe he needs to take her to a doctor, and that's pitiful. You can imagine, it sounds like constant chaos and not a constructive and loving environment for a child. And two, they showed her photos of Jake, Sophia, and Vine in the courtroom today. It was not published because the kids are minors. And there was also one photo just of the Wagners with the kids in front of a tree that was taken at Frederica's farm. Multiple times, the Wagners would talk about BCI could be listening, and they would remind each other to be careful what they were saying. Eventually, thank goodness, she got divorced from Jake, and obviously, she initiated that divorce. So that was the end of direct exam. They went to lunch. I'm sure they're back. She's under cross, but guys, what a sweetheart. And man, talk about being thrown into the real world. I've watched a lot of documentaries about people that were raised in Amish and Mennonite communities, and the world itself is a shock. They have the Rumspringa where they are allowed to go out for years if they want and live as they call the English do, wear regular clothes. A lot of times it can end up bad. And some decide to stay in the real world, and most decide to go back into the Amish communities. But to want to go to Alaska to get your education and go to college and better yourself, and you just meet Mr. Wrong and Mr. Mass Murderer, and you're just too trusting. She really had no clue what she was getting into, and I really super like her. And I hope she does well after this. Maybe somebody can pay her to write a book or something, because she really, to me, has been the most impressionable witness of anybody that knew the Wagner so far. Very honest, and I really super hope right now the defense is not being too hard on her. She's delicate. You can tell she's very emotional. All right, guys. So later tonight, I will go through what happens on cross-exam. I'm sure she may end up and be the only witness today. I don't think the defense stopped writing during her direct testimony, but I'll bring it to you tonight after I take my Grammy to get her MRI. All right, guys, have a good day, and we'll see you later tonight.